done fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right, hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat, Freddy. But never the ferrets.
Hi, this is Dave Schrader from the Ghosts of Devil's Perch on Travel Channel and Discovery Plus, and you're listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 372 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, as usual, we want to thank all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country they represent. Thanks to all them special men, women, and service animals for keeping us safe and giving us the freedoms that we are able to enjoy every day.
Amen to that. You guys, I know we say it every week, but we do pray for you guys and want you to be safe, and thank you for taking care of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, it's that time of year. And I know I say that time of year, but it really does make a difference on people's psyche when the leaves start turning and it starts getting a little bit darker earlier and the weather starts getting a little bit colder.
Yeah, and it seems like it's getting dark really early now.
But it just it changes people's mind frame, I guess is the best way to say it. But we just want people to realize that, look, if you're struggling, reach out to somebody, talk to somebody. Don't ever feel like you're a burden. I think that's the biggest problem people have.
Yeah.
And we have to change that stigma. We have to make sure people realize that it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to not be okay.
Amen to that. You know, you guys, we hope that you guys will reach out. We have a wonderful group. Jerry and I will talk to you at any time. If you need our numbers, just let us know. But there's always somebody that's willing to listen, and we don't want you all to think that there's not. And if you don't want to go that way, you can call the crisis hotline at 988, and you can still text at 741-741. Just please reach out.
Absolutely. Tracy, we got a special guest tonight. Jeff Waldridge is going to be on with us.
Yay.
He's one of the promoters of CryptidCon.
Yes.
He's also running a haunted attraction out of the Anderson Hotel that he just recently took back over about a year or so ago.
Has it been a year?
Yeah, but now they're doing a haunted attraction out of there that he's working on, and he's got a new book out, and we're going to cover all that
Dang,
stuff.
Dang, he's a busy dude.
We're actually one of the sponsors for their haunted attraction.
Awesome. Can't wait.
All right. I'm excited about this one. So we are doing our live event in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, the biggest event that we've ever done as far as ticket sales.
So oh my goodness, I know. Guys. Thank you so much, guys. We cannot wait to see you.
Now, by the time this airs, we will have seen you.
Oh, that's right. I don't know why I always do that.
You have a hard time looking in the future.
I know.
But anyway, Tracy, it goes without saying that our favorite place in the world is Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
It is. Very nice.
The day that we actually do the live event, which was yesterday, if you're listening on the show, was our 16th wedding anniversary.
Yay.
And we come here pretty much every year on our anniversary. There's only been a time or two where we missed. And we came here on our honeymoon and promptly took a ghost tour that very first night.
That's how we roll, ain't it, baby?
Yes. So if you haven't taken the ghost tour in Gatlinburg, I would highly recommend it. With that being said, it's the perfect lead-in to our story tonight.
Yeah.
So Tracy, Tennessee is without a doubt one of the most haunted states in all of the South. Gatlinburg has done its part to actually hold up the reputation by having its fair share of hauntings as well. So we're going to share some hauntings today that all stem from the same story.
Okay.
But we're going to get, I think, five different haunted stories.
Oh, cool, man. There's a lot of things going on in Gatlinburg.
There is.
Yes.
I think it's fair to say that when it comes to the paranormal, there are more non-believers and skeptics than there are believers.
That's what I hear.
Benjamin fit into this skeptic category. It was until he took a job as a tour guide for a ghost tour company there in Gatlinburg. Benjamin had his entire view of the world, as well as to the laws of logic and life and death, pretty much get turned completely upside down by his experiences while being a guide of these ghost tours.
Ooh, how exciting. I cannot wait to hear this.
Benjamin moved from Washington State to Tennessee when he was about 15 years old. Now, Benjamin was raised Protestant, and he didn't consider himself to be a believer in anything that wasn't observable and explainable. For him, it was all about logic and scientifically proven facts. When Benjamin graduated high school, he didn't believe in ghosts, demons, or anything supernatural. Not even Dean and Sam Winchester.
Oh, what?
Hold your gasp, because I knew you were going to be upset about that.
Oh my gosh, I love me some Dean.
I like some Jimmy Dean.
I do too, actually. Is he still alive?
I think he just recently died, like within the last couple of years.
Oh, okay. Now I'm hungry. Sausage.
Like most high school graduates, Benjamin wanted his own money and he needed a job. He actually wanted to get a job as a graphic designer, and he was going to save money for college, but that gig fell through. What he did find, though, was a job that paid well, and he only had to work 2 hours a night.
Dang.
Most nights, he made about $60 a night. Now, for a high school kid working two hours.
Heck yeah, that's awesome.
That's pretty good. But he would soon realize that money would not be the most beneficial part of this job. You see, this is where Benjamin's struggle with the paranormal begins. At first, the job giving ghost tours didn't seem like a great fit for someone as skeptical as Benjamin.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, why would he do that if he was like, I mean, I guess you just take what you give.
But I mean, if you're an actor, theoretically,
well, yeah,
you
yeah.
act a whole bunch of different parts that aren't things That's you true. Play, so it's just a matter of being an actor.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem like it'd be kind of tricky to pull off, though. I mean, could you imagine that you're over here and you're like, and right here is the site of the white lady. And then someone asked, who was she? And then you're like, oh, who cares? You don't really believe in that crap, do you? probably not the best way to get tips.
I was going to say, no way to get a tip.
But for $60 for 2 hours, no physical work was involved. Benjamin was all in. There were some other perks besides the money. He got to meet a bunch of new people from all over the world, and he got to learn about the city's history, even more than he ever knew. He earned plenty of tips, and overall, he had a good time leading the tours. So the stories were quite interesting, considering that a big chunk of them might have had a little bit of a made-up plot. And that's that way with most ghost tours,
I think. Oh, yeah, of course it is.
Other stories were heavily embellished, but a good portion of them were all true, or at least allegedly true. But like I said, Benjamin did not believe in the paranormal, nor did he want to. It was quite the internal conflict, I guess we'll say. So he didn't want to believe, but he also didn't want to leave this job. He really liked this job.
Yeah.
So he decided he was just going to do whatever it took to hang with it. And if it meant going away from his belief system, so be it. But over the next several months, Benjamin would see things that would make him question his belief system. In the space of 2 years, Benjamin's life changed in an unimaginable way. He experienced all kinds of odd, unsettling, alarming, and truly terrifying experiences. He went from skeptical to doubting his own conviction. And eventually, he was convinced that there was things out there in life that he just could not explain. All right, so let's cover some of these occurrences.
All right.
At the beginning of these tours, Benjamin would hand out EMF meters to every person that was in the tour group. You've all seen these things on the Ghost Hunter shows, and they're meant to detect an electromagnetic field. Well, some people think these are just cheap toys, but others find them very useful tools to detect an actual ghost. Benjamin was kind of leaning towards the opinion of them being toys. He saw them as something that added entertainment to the tour, though, so he was all for it. At least that's how I looked at it until this one particular night. The tour had went smoothly up to the very end. So they end the tour, as usual, in an eerie cemetery. So it stops the same place every night.
Oh, heck yeah.
And we've taken that tour.
We have.
They're in the cemetery, and Benjamin's given his closing remarks to the group when one of the men experienced a problem with his EMF meter. So the man claims that the EMF detector would shut down completely as he walked past one particular gravesite. It would turn back on as soon as he moved past it, a step or two either way. Now, this shouldn't be happening. If you know anything about EMF detectors, there is basically six lights on them. It starts off at a green at the bottom, mm-hmm. ends up at red at the top, and then there's a bunch of colors in between. Uh-huh. As it picks up intensity. So if you get a little bit of action, you get a couple of lights, light up, whatever. And if you're getting nothing, there's no lights on it, but it doesn't turn itself off.
Right.
And that's what it was doing here. So the concept was just strange. So Benjamin goes over and he sees that the man was absolutely correct. It turned off while standing at that one particular headstone and back on any time they got away from it.
Now, was he making the same guy do that, or did he do that as well?
They both had the same issue.
Okay, so he went in front of it. Okay,
gotcha. Right. So now they're like, well, this is strange. And the group has now noticed what's happening, and now they're all over there uh-huh. at that grave
yeah.
watching this little experiment take place over and over and over again, always with the same results. So now they're trying to read the name on the headstone. The headstone was very old and weathered, so it was very hard to read. The tension was growing, and the air was turning colder. They even seemed to think that it was getting darker somehow.
Well, they're about to get their money's worth, aren't they?
Yes, they're definitely getting their money's worth. Now, like I said, it was a really old grave, and the letters were almost entirely gone. They eventually managed to read the first name, Thomas. They said it over and over, but they couldn't make out anything of the mm-hmm. last name. Like I said, it was pretty weathered and the letters were pretty much gone. But then someone yelled, Wiley. A man yelled it so loud that everybody in the group turned around to see who had managed to read these barely legible letters and make a name of it. But there was absolutely no one else behind them.
Oh boy.
The voice did not come from the group. The voice did not come from an explainable source, but everyone heard it. And now everyone in the group felt that it came from the grave of Thomas Wiley himself.
Yikes.
Now Benjamin was confused about obviously what had happened, but he was still highly skeptical. This voice could have came from, you know, anybody.
I know, but it just seems, I don't understand how he could be, what is that word?
Skeptical?
Yeah. Especially when not only that, but then the light or the EMF meter going off and on like it was.
Right. Yeah, so you actually had two different things
yeah,
associated with that grave. He says that he was still skeptical about the whole thing, but what he did start doing was leaving flowers on the grave of Thomas Wiley. Benjamin acknowledged that it was harder and harder to ignore things that were happening on the tour on a regular basis. But these instances would become even more unnerving and even harder to ignore, like the next experience.
Okay. I mean, did he Like when he started his tours from then on, did he mention those happenings, I wonder?
Oh, I don't know. Okay. I don't know. So Benjamin was accustomed to getting tips at the end of the night if he had done a good job.
Mm-hmm. Which he should.
He would usually shake hands with most of the guests at the end of the night, and this is when they would usually give him his tips. Most of the older men tended to shake your hand and then discreetly hand you your tip in the handshake. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, of course.
They've got their bill like in their hand. They shake their hand. They just pass it as they shake your hand. One of these handshakes would stand out way more than the others. So on this particular tour, there was a family. It was a married couple and their little girl and the little girl's grandfather. The grandpa seemed okay, but his questions really stood out. This, in fact, made Benjamin very uncomfortable. So most people ask him about, you know, hey, what did this ghost look like or what did they do? But Grandpa here, he was a little more interested in the type of, you know, like, for example, what type of knife was used in the stabbing or the shape of the bullet wounds on somebody who had been shot or the type of blood splatter that there was on the wall.
Gosh.
He even asked about the weight of the limbs that were torn from a body. I couldn't even imagine that. How much did that arm weigh?
Yeah, and I'm sure this guy did not have the answers to any of that.
So he was more fascinated about, you know, the gory parts of Benjamin's stories. So the tour ends, and Benjamin was more than happy to shake this man's hand and get his tip and let that guy just move on to whatever else he was going to do that night. But when his skin made contact with this man's hand, Benjamin said that it was not like shaking the hand with a regular old man with circulation problems or something. Nope. He was deadly cold. Right out of the freezer, straight from the morgue cold. Benjamin got a chill that ran straight down his spine and he quickly pulled his hand back. That's when he realized that he wasn't holding regular dollar bills. In fact, his hand was full of silver coins.
He's like, score!
Benjamin quickly turned around to face the old man, and he was nowhere to be seen. Benjamin was dumbfounded, and he thought, there's no way this could be real. The cemetery where the tour ends is on a hill, and it's only about 300 yards, and there's no way anybody could run fast enough to get out of sight as quick as this man did.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin was shaken by the event. He went back to the group to speak to the family that the old man was with. But that family says that he wasn't part of their group. He was already there when they arrived. In fact, he greeted their little girl by her real name and not her nickname.
What?
Even though they had never met him, he knew what that little girl's name was. So the family left almost immediately after this conversation, almost like they didn't want to hear the rest of what Benjamin had to say. Like, yeah, this is already freaky enough. We don't need more. Benjamin said that he thought the old man looked just like the woman's father. So that's who he assumed that she was. So is it possible that this could have been the spirit of maybe one of their ancestors, and that's how he knew the little girl's name, and that's why it looked like her?
Right. I mean, sure sounds like it.
The coins that Benjamin got from the old man, by the way, well, they were hundreds of years old and were not legal currency for the time.
Oh, man, so he couldn't even use them.
I would think if they're actual silver, you can go get money for them, but it wasn't something that anybody was currently using as their currency. After this experience, Benjamin was starting to consider that his prior convictions might be a little bit wrong. He started second-guessing everything that he saw and heard and everything he talked about on the tour. Now, Tracy, one of the stops on the tour was an abandoned cabin. This cabin had historical significance to Gatlinburg. It was built by a single mother with her bare hands for her 8 children.
Dang, you go, girl.
This cabin was kept locked by security to to avoid any type of vandalism. Like I said, this is a, you know, a treasure mm-hmm. for the town. But it was all too easy for the guides to just stand by the cabin and make up whole creepy stories about the family's background, blah, 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 the ghost of the old woman pacing back and forth inside the cabin, blah, 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 mm-hmm. whatever it took. Scared people tip the best, so it's not unusual for guides to embellish a little bit, or a lot. In fact, the picture on the sign at the cabin is a lie to begin with. You see, the mother actually died long before witnessing the technology of modern photography. So when she was alive, they couldn't have even taken her picture.
Yeah.
But her granddaughter, her great-granddaughter, daughter, I should say, apparently looked extremely similar to her. So they dressed her up in the period clothing and took the picture and used that on the actual cabin.
Well, hey, that was smart.
So everyone just went with it until one day, Benjamin stops by the cabin with his group. The group had a very inquisitive 13-year-old boy. He was trying his best to act like he wasn't scared, but he was. He walked up to Benjamin, and he said, "Who's that woman in costume?" Well, Benjamin wasn't exactly thrilled to inform him that the woman in the picture was actually the great-granddaughter of the woman from the legend. But that wasn't what the young teen was referring to. He emphatically shook his head, and he dragged Benjamin away from the group, and he took him towards the window on the side of the cabin. He then said, "Who is she? Who is that woman in costume?" He just kept asking over and over, and he was a little more freaked out each time he asked. Well, emphatically pointing in the window, he got Benjamin's attention. Benjamin felt his heartbeat pick up, and his hands started to get sweaty as he looked in the window. He had no idea what to tell the kid, but as Benjamin looked in, he completely understood, because this cabin that was abandoned and secured, locked, there was an elderly woman sitting on a rocking chair, slowly rocking back and forth. The old woman was not moving a muscle. Her white hair was a mess. She had on a white nightgown that was completely worn down. Her skin was incredibly wrinkled. She appeared to be staring at a random spot on the wall instead of facing the window. Benjamin tried his best to drag the 13-year-old away from the window before he went into hysterics. So Benjamin felt that it must be a homeless person. They must have broken into the little cabin looking for shelter. While it might have been really good for business to have somebody sitting in there that you could say it was a ghost or something, but you can't have people jumping into a cabin that's got that kind of historical significance.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the tour was over, he returned to the cabin and he double-checked and prepared to call his supervisor or even the police. I mean, this was, like I said, an historical landmark. Benjamin steps in front of the window again. There was no one inside. There wasn't even a rocking chair. He gripped the bars of the window tightly as his mind wandered. It went into several different directions, and it was then that he realized that there had never been a rocking chair inside that cabin. No woman, no chair, no explanation. But this wouldn't be Benjamin's last experience on the tour. It was not unusual to have bachelorette parties on the tour. It was a fun group, usually some drunk women. They'd make some stops at this attraction, and then they'd end up heading to the next bar, whatever the case was.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin greeted this group of five women, and he gave them five EMF meters. And he got them started like he did anyone else in the group. They had plenty of fun. They screamed a lot. They were having tons of just fun being out
right.
and about.
Mm-hmm.
Since it was sort of a rowdy group, Benjamin made it a point to do a head count at every stop. He obviously didn't want to lose one of these drunk girls along the road because, you know, that's just going to cause trouble for everybody involved. Well, after a full hour of counting five heads at every stop, Benjamin was taken by surprise at the very end of the tour when only four women were standing with him. He asked them about their missing friend. The women insisted that there were only four of them, and that's all there ever was.
Oh, man.
Benjamin felt like he
was losing... Not a party crasher.
Yeah, Benjamin felt like he was losing his mind. He double-checked everything. He was completely sure that he handed out five EMF readers and only got four of them in return. But there was not a single one missing from the inventory. On top of that, the registration book only had four names in there for the group. No one in the group could confirm that there was another woman with their group.
Wow, that is crazy.
Benjamin was so sure that he saw all of them laughing together. Not a single one of them seemed like they were an outsider. They just seemed like a clique. He specifically remembered the missing girl staring at him, laughing and smiling.
So, I mean, was she like in the same age group as the
Yeah, he boys? Said they looked like they were all together.
Oh, man.
He said she just disappeared without a trace. And at that point, Benjamin's life was completely changed. He was now a full-on believer.
Oh, I would say so. So did he stay on as a tour guide?
He was there for 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah. So, how about that for an interesting
That's cool, story? Man. That's cool. It's a good thing that he became a believer. And all, I mean, it's so weird. I mean, she was like a, maybe a, no, I wouldn't say that. No. Not a shapeshifter. That wouldn't work. Oh, sorry.
That's too much supernatural. She's not, she wouldn't a Wendigo.
So, I know, but I guess it's just weird that it's, this thing was the same age as the other girls and stuff like, I don't know, it's just weird.
I was expecting it to I thought the ending was going to be that they had somebody that was supposed to be with them on there, but maybe she was, you know,
freaked
died
out.
In a car accident or something like that.
Oh.
And then maybe that was her spirit. I thought that's what it was going to be, but apparently not.
Oh, dang. Ooh. Good times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you'd love to be one of those, I think.
Oh, yeah, I would have a blast.
You would. You would, like, tell funny jokes in between, or I can just see it now.
Well, that's what I did at the Mega Cavern when I was a tour guide.
Oh, well, yeah, you were.
And we got to do that one part where there was ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I did kind of do that. The only thing that I would hate about being a the ghost tours is you literally have to tie up every night, and you got to tie up all your weekends.
Yeah, well, that's true.
That's what I don't like about it. That's the only reason I never became a rock star, that and my severe lack of talent.
You shouldn't be so hard on yourself.
That's what she said. Anyways, that wraps up the story for this. So let's take a quick sponsor break, and we'll be back with Jeff Waldridge. We're not going to do any Patreons or anything this week because we're recording this early.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just do them double up on them next week. But you guys enjoy Jeff. Hey guys, it's Jerry with Hillbilly Horror Stories, and I want to tell you about some friends of ours over at Hillbilly Horror Show. What is Hillbilly Horror Show? In a nutshell, it's Tales from the Crypt meets Rednecks. Bo's funny, Lulu's hot, and Cephas, well, he's Cephas. The three of them are going to welcome you into their trailer so you can sit down and watch some of the best horror shorts that you've ever seen in your life by some of the biggest names in the business. There are currently four full-length episodes out, all of them absolutely free on the free Tubi app. Don't just take my word for it. Let me give you a sample.
Oh, hi, y'all. Just cleaning up, but come on in. Bo, Cephas, where's your manners?
Oh, hi, y'all. I done forgot you's coming over. Boy, me and old Cephas, we've been waiting for you, and let me tell you, this boy is full of surprises. Now, here's what Cephas done up and did. He picked out some movies based on the title alone that he liked. And we're going to check them out. Give them here. Give them.
I told you he was attached to them things. He'd been sleeping with them under his pillow.
How you know he's got them under his pillow?
You know I check on him at 7 p.m. when he go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Apparently he's got a preference of order. This one?
Mm-hmm.
Help wanted. Look, if you try and say I can't get a job, it's just because the economy's in a recession. Besides, I've been saving up for my own dream business. Now picture it, Cephas. Bo's Taxidermy and Strip Club. You can come in and get your weasel stuffed, or you can get your... Anyway, we're going to check out Help Wanted.
There you have it, folks. Go spend the next several hours watching the hilarious hijinks from Lulu, Cephas, and Bo, and then check out some of the best horror shorts you've ever seen. So go check out Hillbilly Horror Show on Tubi. Remember, it's a free app, and tell your friends. Hey, guys. We are always excited to have repeat guests on, and I've got not only a repeat guest, but a good friend of Tracy and mine, Jeff Waldridge. Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jeff, you're one of these people that I have a hard time pinning down as far as a title, because, I mean, you've done pretty much everything. You make documentaries. You're an author with a new book, The Haunting of Bourbon Town. You have been involved in the paranormal forever. You actually now are running a haunted attraction, and you're a promoter of Cryptid Con and one of the originals to start up Scarefest here in Lexington. So, I mean, you literally are the epitome of jack of all trades.
Right. Maybe I'm like a paranormal tourism creator. I don't know. But I always tell people, like, it's funny because there's a lot of exposure right now in the state of Kentucky, especially like in Anderson County where the hotel is and other things. And they've got like this whole Kentucky After Dark ad campaign that Anderson County's a part of. And, you know, the hotel's a big part of it and Bigfoot's a big part of it. And a lot of that stuff I kind of helped, you know, bring to the forefront. So it's kind of cool to see all that. But I guess, yeah, I am kind of a jack of all trades. The haunted house kind of fell in my lap. And then I always wanted to do a book to be almost like a companion to the ghost tour that I do. So it's kind of a deeper dive into, you know, the history of the buildings and things like that. So, yeah, it's I don't know. When you put it all out there, maybe I'm nuts. Maybe that's the title.
And I forgot the fact that you started Wild Man Days out there in Anderson County.
Yeah, me and Lee and Jennifer started Wild Man Days, and we're looking to maybe do that again next year. So there's a lot going on.
So let's go back a little bit. I want to talk about the book. We'll talk about the book as it comes up a little later in the show. But let's talk about the Anderson Hotel. So last year, you had a chance to get back in there and actually start doing tours and stuff. And you've had some stuff happen since then. And we had you on back when you first got that gig going again. So tell me a little bit about what's happened.
I'll tell you the weird part about it. And I always tell people this, it's almost like the hotel called me back. You know, I'd been, you know, for the others that may have not heard before or whatever, I'd been booked to do a speaking engagement at the Engine House in Winchester, which I'm going to be doing again, I think October 11th. And, they have wanted me to come down and talk about the hotel. And I had an event booked here in Lawrenceburg at another place to investigate. And that kind of fell through. So I kind of reached out to the owners. I was like, hey, do you want me to come back in? You know, could I bring this group here? And they were like, yeah, that'd be great. Let's try to figure out what we can do with the upstairs, because it's just sitting. And so then we were off to the races. And I finished out last year with doing some tours and things. And now we're doing private investigations. We've opened up for that again. And then, you know, it was the opportunity to do a haunted house in the hotel. And I'll tell you, the weird part about it is ever since I got back into this place, it's almost like when I originally got into the place, how the energy was kind of low and it wasn't really active. And I was like, okay, well, it's set empty since 2019. I mean, literally since 2019, nobody had been up here till last fall. And then when I came back, it's almost like I had to almost start over with trying to get them, you know, interacting again and things like that. But it's really started to pick up. And now since we've started working on the haunted house, footsteps, I mean, are pretty much regular activity. I've seen a few things up here that I hadn't seen before. So, I mean, it's starting to kind of get back to where it used to be. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because where it used to be at times was very volatile. So, you know, I guess we'll see how it goes.
So let's talk about the haunted attraction. Tracy and I are excited that Hillbilly Horror Stories is actually one of the sponsors.
Yes.
For the haunted house, so we're a haunted attraction, I should say. We're excited about that, but your haunted attraction is different than most of these places, because it's set up on you know, the history of the actual Anderson Hotel. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's all based on the history and the hauntings of the hotel. So the haunted house that was up here before was just your typical haunted house. They did a great job. They had all kinds of people come in, and they did great things for local charities. But, you know, they had famous characters like Jason, Freddy, different things like that. And I didn't want to do that. You know, here in town, the Lions Club used to do a haunted house years ago when I was younger, and all of their haunted houses were story-based. So that means there was a story that ran throughout the entire haunted house, and it all was connected. And so that's what I wanted to do with the hotel. So the whole story here is basically you're coming into a building to rent a room. But what you don't realize is that it's actually in an abandoned building, and you're crossing back into the eras and time when the ghosts were alive. And you come face to face with our dark past is kind of the ad campaign that I've been running. And you basically come into contact with the ghosts that lived and died here, and you get to experience them turned up to about a million. So, you know, you get to see the living history of the hotel and in a very extreme way.
So a lot of the haunted attractions have already kind of started to open up. Are you guys open already, or are you?
We open this Saturday night, September 30th, and we will run all the way to Halloween. Now, the Halloween tickets are not available yet. Every other ticket is available online at oldandersonhotel.com. The reason we haven't put the Halloween tickets on there yet is because we're going to do something pretty special for Halloween. So we'll be announcing that in the next week or so.
And of course, for those of you out there listening, Lawrenceburg area Anderson Hotel, this is not too far from Frankfort, Kentucky. I mean, or Lexington, you know, like I can get there in basically 40 minutes.
Yeah, we're right in the middle. At. I mean, you know, Louisville people can come from, you know, about the same distance that you drive. That's what I love about it, is it's centrally located in the state, and people can get here very quickly. So it's an easy little trip to come up and experience the haunted house and then go back home.
How long does it take to get through the attraction, Jeff?
If you do the Dead Pass, which that's our VIP ticket, you actually get a second attraction. And the second attraction is on the most haunted side of the hotel. And we've created a very cool experience over there that I can't really give away. But that's sure. That's where a lot of the deaths occurred. And you get to actually walk through that area. It's self-guided. It's very little light. And we've got some tricks up our sleeve for that part over there. And then you get to come into the regular side of the haunted house, which everything's been recreated. The deaths have been over here. And all in all, I would say you're probably, if you do the VIP pass, you're probably going to be in here, you know, 30, 40 minutes if you do both sides. If you do want just the general admission with the regular haunted house, I mean, you're looking at least 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about some of the darker history of the hotel. I mean, obviously, that's what you base some of these stories off of. Tell me an instance or two of things that have that happened at the hotel that make it so dark.
Well, unfortunately, we've been, you know, just we have a horrible history of suicide, which is very unfortunate, you know. And I always tell people, with the haunted house, we're not glorifying that in any way. But, and we want, you know, we want to just make sure people understand that that's not the way to go. And, you know, but we do have to tell that story. And it was probably one of the hardest parts, is to how to show that in a tasteful manner. And so that's what we kind of had to do. But we've had several suicides. There are two bloodstained mattresses up here that still exist. One was from a suicide. The other one, I'm not sure. We don't know what the history is on that. And then there's a tub from the 30s that's absolutely soaked in blood that when you spray it with Luminol, it glows bright blue. I mean, it's just, we've had a lot of stuff happen up here. There's been about 14 deaths from the mid-60s to the late 80s. There's a whole time period from the mid-30s to the mid-60s we're missing history on. We have no idea. There's nobody that I've ever been able to tell us stories, but you know that stuff happened back then because they were hotels, and hotels, especially low-rate hotels like this was, they were very common for things to occur, you know, violence and things like that. Just last week, we heard a story that somebody was shot up here. And it was literally probably the most vague story that I remember. A guy was shot upstairs. No idea where it happened. No idea how it happened. But it was an older person that told us that. And we're constantly getting new stories. I mean, it's just, you'll get a person telling you, well, my mother was the maid up there. And I remember, you know, the people up there. And what everybody always talks about it was how dark it was in the building. The lights were very dim. And that, we've recreated that almost perfectly when you come into the lobby area for the haunted house. I mean, it's, you will be amazed because the errors that the people lived in that died here have been recreated. So we had to scour peddler's malls and flea markets and everything you could imagine to get like 80s telephones and 60s alarm clocks and things like that. So, and yes, it is a typical haunted house. So every room has its dark side, but you know, the history up here is just insane with prostitution and drug addiction and alcoholism. I mean, just gambling, anything you could imagine went on in this place. And there's a whole lot of stories we just don't know and may never know.
Tell me about some of the hauntings, true hauntings, some things that you've seen at the hotel.
I'll tell you, the other day, probably about 2 weeks ago, I was up here working on the haunted house, and in the mattress in the room where the suicide mattress is, where the girl died on in the late 80s, I actually saw what looked like a reflection, like floating above the bed. It was right above the mattress, and then it moved over beside the mattress. So I was trying to debunk it and think logically and be like, okay, where's the reflection coming from? But the windows are all blocked off up here because of the lighting. So there was no light coming into the room. So it was literally a reflection with no light. And that's the first time I'd ever seen any type of issue in that room. Everything is usually just, you know, audio or something in there. About 2 months ago, we were up here. Me and my daughter was finishing up a ghost tour. And people usually take some pictures and things on their way out. So we were walking through, making sure everybody was out. And on the other side of the hotel, which they'll get to go into if they buy the dead pass, we heard a woman talking at the back of the hallway. And I told her, I said, ah, somebody's probably still back there taking pictures. I said, we'll go back there, tell her, you know, they're ready to go, make sure they're ready to leave. And so we walked back there and nobody was there. There was not a single person on that side. We were so sure that a person was in the hotel that we went through the entire place again, because if I locked the doors, you can't get out. And it was when it was kind of warm, so I didn't want somebody to die up here. So we went through again and nobody was around. So that's been happening a lot here lately, especially since we started darkening the windows out, and it's basically dark up here all the time. We've started to have a whole lot of stuff happen. I mean, just yesterday, there was a door slammed up here in the hallway. And my wife experienced that. And it was kind of funny because before that, I was kind of giving the ghost a hard time. And, you know, the door slammed in the hallway. So I was like, well, okay then.
You know, I forgot to mention, out of everything else that you do, you were doing ghost tours city. Are you still doing that?
Well, I've wrapped them up this year. I wrapped them up last weekend. And I did that for two reasons. I've got to have a medical procedure done, so I've got to kind of take it easy. So I can focus on the haunted house too in October and make sure that that's successful. But I wanted to make sure that, you know, everything ran right. So I'm not going to be doing them through October this year, but I am teaming up with a local bourbon tour company. And we're going to be offering some spirit tours in Anderson County where you get to actually go out to like Wild Turkey and some of the other places we can't walk to. And you'll hear about their hauntings and history. So, you know, if they want to know more about that, they can go to bourbonbarrelcottages.com. And we're going to be offering those kind of things year round. So we'll be inside of a van with screens and, you know, it's pretty much all wheel drive. So there ain't much holding us back. We can do it pretty much year round.
Well, I guess that's the perfect opportunity to talk about The Haunting of a Bourbon Town, your newest book. Tell me about the book, Jeff.
Well, the book is kind of like a year's worth of work. I had the idea to do it, and I wanted to do it as a companion piece to the ghost tour because people always ask more questions about, okay, what about this place? What about that place? And we couldn't walk to them. So the book is pretty much a full detailed telling of the haunting of Lawrenceburg. And that's why it's called A Haunting of a Bourbon Town, because we are a bourbon town. And I thought the name would be catchy. It wouldn't really pigeonhole us as far as like haunted Lawrenceburg or something typical that people use. And I wanted something kind of catchy. Now, the cover art, if people see the cover art, is actually a nod to the old Flim Flam Man poster back in the day. Because Flim Flam Man is an old movie from the 60s that had George C. Scott. And it was filmed a lot in Lawrenceburg. So one of the posters had like this really old style, you know, very crazy drawing of several aspects of the movie. And that's kind of what I did. So my brother-in-law actually drew the cover. And he's an amazing artist, and he nailed the cover, and he did great with it. And it's a huge, crazy montage of everything that's in the book. So there's all kinds of little, almost like Where's Waldo type things where you can pick out and be like, oh, well, there's that, or there's this hidden in there. So it is a great book. It does cover a lot of history and a lot of haunted stuff. And I wanted it to read almost like I was telling you the story. So that's the way it's written is like me talking to you.
That's my favorite kind of books. I say this, and I'm not knocking authors, but some authors just, they get in their own way. You know, they try so hard to, if I'm reading five sentences and I got to stop three different times in those five sentences to look up a word that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
At that point, you're just, well, you're not lending yourself to your whole entire audience. You're lending yourself to a group of people. I'm always going to find a word I'm not sure about, but it shouldn't be three or four and, you know, five or six sentences. That's just trying to be too cute as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And when I did this, I had a co-author, John Cosper, and he's written a ton of books. And I told him, I said from the beginning, I said, the way I want this to read is I want it to literally sound like I'm sitting in front of him telling a story. And that's the way we did it. So the way we accomplished that was we literally sat down and I talked to him on a recorder and then he turned it into text. And then we went back through and added in things and critiqued things and kind of made it what it needed to be. So everybody's enjoyed it so far. It released a little early. I haven't really pushed it hardcore yet because it wasn't supposed to come out to the 1st of October, but it came out of a few weeks early because the publisher got it done quicker. So, but I will be doing a lot of promotion and things for that in October.
Where could someone buy the book if they wanted to?
It's on Amazon, or you can go to eatsleepwrestle.com or deadparkbooks.com. Either one of those has it. That's the publishing company that he uses, but it's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon today.
Okay, very cool. What's the name of the book one more time?
The Haunting of a Bourbon Town.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to come check out the haunted attraction. Can't wait to read the book. And can't wait for CryptidCon. We might as well get a plug in there for that since we got you on here.
You know, let's plug that in there because it's coming too. As soon as we get wrapped up here When I'm done with the haunted house, it'll be off to Crypticon and working on all of that. So we've got a great lineup. You know, we've got David Pilatus, we've got, you know, Cliff, and we've got the Mountain Monsters. So we've got a ton of folks. We got, you know, just a great lineup, like usual, of great speakers and great vendors. And we've kind of changed it around this year. So this year we're moving the seminars up to where one of the vendor halls was, and we're going to actually put all the vendors in one spot. So they've kind of done some renovations at the hotel, and it made it very possible to do that.
Oh, good, good, good. That'd be fun. Yeah, it's I love Mountain Monsters, and they're there every year. And of course, Cliff Brackman, him and his wife are always there. It's just, it's a blast there. And I'm excited that David Pilatus is back, because I think it's been probably 3 or 4 years, probably before COVID, since David's been there. So I'm excited to corner him and make him come on the show.
Oh, yeah. It's great whenever, you know, you have stuff like that. And I love that time of year, because you get to see so many people that you don't get to see normally. And it's almost like a reunion of friends, and you get to kind of hang out with them for a weekend. It's almost sad when it's over with, you know, because, you don't get to hang out as much.
The thing about CryptidCon, and for people that kind of pay attention to this kind of thing, you know, this was usually in October, and now it's moved to November. And so it's the Saturday right before Thanksgiving, and there's not a lot of conventions that go deep into November like that. So that kind of sets CryptidCon apart from the others.
It really does. And that's what I like about it. It's almost like a family atmosphere, you know, among the speakers and things. There's no competition. There's no, you know how it is. Sometimes a pissing contest or between egos. There's just none of that. And that's the whole environment we tried to create.
I used to tell people all the time, I don't know, about probably 4 or 5 years ago, Nick Groff was there. And I loved it because it was so different from other conventions, because like Nick was roaming around and just saying hi to everybody. And, all, you know, you don't see that from the big names at the conventions. You go to some of these other ones and they're just stuck behind their little table, and you know, they're taking all the pictures and stuff. But it's different at CryptidCon because the guests do kind of interact with everybody else.
Yeah, and that's what we try to do, is we try to make it, you know, when we have our little VIP reception on Fridays, we try to make it where it's just, you know, it's a comfortable environment. It shouldn't be a situation, and that's with any conference. They shouldn't put their guests or their speakers on a pedestal, because a lot of times they don't enjoy that. They would much rather be out talking to people and networking and trying to work with other folks, because there's been a lot of good relationships formed at these kind of conventions. And then after that, future times has led to other projects.
No, 100% agree. And, you know, like I said, we've become really close with Mike Couch and his sister and even his mom. And all that was because we were set up next to him at CryptidCon, you know, the first time we went. So, I mean, you're right. You can build these relationships. And I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing, like you said, the family atmosphere you can have at this one compared to other conventions.
Yeah. And I invite everybody to come out and check it out. You know, if you've been to an experience at a convention, and maybe it was a larger convention, or maybe you didn't think that it was great, and maybe you soured yourself on conventions. You're like, man, maybe it's just not my thing. Try to come out and enjoy CryptidCon if you're into that kind of stuff, because it's not just for entertainment. I mean, it's networking. It's all kinds of different things. We try to have several avenues where people can come out and enjoy the atmosphere.
No, 100%, and we absolutely love it, and we can't wait for it. This will be our fifth, maybe fourth or fifth.
I think it is actually.
So, all right, Jeff, it's been great having you on, brother. I appreciate it as always. Tracy and I'll probably try to come out next weekend, and we'll catch a time when you're out at the hotel and come out and check it out before everybody starts rolling in on the weekend.
You come anytime, and I'll give you a good. I'll give you a tour of everything. I'll show you how it all works.
All right, brother. I'll catch you next week.
All right, talk to you later.
Well, guys, that wraps it up for us, and we love you, and we'll see you next week.